Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Like everyone, I would like to thank, first of all, the organizer for inviting me, especially that so many experimentalists were invited to the Institute of Theoretical Physics. And I am an experimentalist, and I will collect some data which are partly not explained, and I would like to encourage the theoretician to think about it. And I will concentrate on three different types of experiments on transport measurements on separately contacted two-dimensional systems. So double-layer systems, but in our case, the two layers are separately contacted. There's no tunneling coupling between. There's a lot of activity in double layers where we have tunneling coupling. So I will speak about separate two-dimensional systems. And most of these results were presented at the beginning of this month at the conference Electronic Properties of Two-Dimensional Systems. And I have stolen from my co-workers these results. And there's mainly Werner Dietsche, who has developed the technology for contacting these different layers, and Sjoerd Lok has done drag measurements, Michael Pult capacitance measurements, and Jürgen Weiss with Ulf Wilhelm, Jörg Schmidt, were involved in measurements on double dot systems. And originally I wanted also to mention very recent results, cyclone resonance of composite fermions, but I think I will have no time to mention this, but this is also another topic, very recent new results. So the system I will discuss is MBE-grown gallium arsenide heterostructures. These are the active layers, the blue and the red one, the insulator, the green one, aluminum gallium arsenide. Separation in this case, for example, 40 nanometers between this active two-dimensional system and this two-dimensional system. In this case, both are electrons. I will also mention one experiment where we have electron-hole system, but in this case, two-dimensional electron gas, two-dimensional electron gas. And at the second part or the end of my talk, the main puzzling results will be presented in these type of experiments, where we have a current flowing in one of these layers, and then measure the drag voltage in the other one. And there's a definition of some transfer resistance, which is then the ratio of the drag voltage divided by the drive current, normalized with the geometry. And this interaction effect between these two layers in the magnetic field, this will be one of the topics at the more or less at the end of my talk. Now, one has to make separate contacts to these two layers. And these are finally the geometries we are using. So these are the two layers, one the blue and the red layer. And we need separate contacts. But normally, if you alloy a contact, then you shortcut the two layers. But this contact, in this case, is only connected to the lower layer, because by this gate, we can deplete. So we can disconnect this layer from this contact. So this contact has only contact to this layer. And this one, if we have some overgrown gate here, and we deplete with this gate this channel, then this contact has no connection to this channel. So this layer contact to this one, this contact to this layer. In this way, we can produce the separate contacts to the layers, even if the distance is only 10, 5 nanometers. So this is the arrangement. But in order to do this, we need some gates which are overgrown. It's a very complicated procedure, so we have to interrupt the growth procedure in the MBE and then do some etching. Most of the samples were grown at the Walter Schottky Institute in Munich. So we have this highly doped layer, which is finally the gate, which can deplete in certain areas of the lower channel. And then we have some wet etching process, very flat angles here, so that we can overgrow the system. Then this is the overgrown structure, and then we can prepare the structure, and then we can prepare these devices. So finally, it looks like this, a top view of such a device. So these are the two layers on top of each other, the top view. Then with the top gate, we can disconnect the upper layer, so we have here only the contact to the lower one. Here we have the back gates, so we have only the contact to the upper one, and then we have additional gates on the front and on the back to have independent control of the carrier density in the two different layers. So we can control nearly everything, we can do electrical measurements on these separate systems. Now, if this is so easy, then we can do even more complicated things. We can structure, lateral structure, then these two layers to quantum dots, so that we have two quantum dot layers on top of each other. And the idea is to have this double layer system, and then by etching, we have some lateral geometry. And the etching is done in such a geometry. So here, the top view, there's a double layer system. These are grooves. And then we deplete the double layer system. We have here one gate electrode, here electrode to control, then the tunneling properties. So we have here a dot system. Below this, another dot system. We have here contact, separate contact for the two layers, and then can measure the interaction between the two dot systems, which are on top of each other with a relatively small distance, with strong interaction between the dots. Finally, we have such a system, separate contacts to source dot drain system, another contact to this system, and then we can control with gate electrodes and also with voltage between the two systems, the charging of these two structures. So finally, it looks relatively complicated, the structure. This is a total structure where we have here these two dots on top of each other. Then here all the control of the two systems, and here all the gates to control these double dot system with separate electrical contacts. Now, if one has such a double dot system, we can tune with the gate voltage, the occupation of the dot, then we have this diagram for the occupation numbers on these two dot systems, N1 and N2. So this is finally, with this gate voltage, we control the increase in number N1 in the upper layer. With this gate voltage, for example, the number of electrons in the lower layer. And then we have certain numbers in the double dot system. So along such a boundary, we change in the lower dot system by one the electron. We have here a peak, here zero conductance in the structure. And the interesting point is this boundary here. At this boundary, or this boundary, we change simultaneously the number of electrons in both layers. This is shown here in the lower part. We have a co-tunneling process. So if we enter with one electron in the upper one, we have to simultaneously to leave with the lower one, because if you go along this boundary from N1, you increase N1, but you decrease N2. So you have this correlated process at this boundary, this co-tunneling process. Whereas at the other boundaries, at the yellow one, you have a tunneling in the upper layer, or at this in below in the lower layer. And these are then really the experimental data, the conductivity as a function of two tunable gate voltages. Here are the numbers for the electron of the system, and we measure the conductance in the upper layer. So here we have this conductance peak for normal single electron transport in the upper layer. And the interesting point, once more, is the C here, where we have this correlated transport through the upper layer, and then simultaneously something in the lower layer. And our conclusion for this system is that the double dot system, under the condition of this co-tunneling process, is a new realization of the Anderson impurity model without a spin. We have now a degeneracy between the upper and the lower system, but we can occupy only with one electron, then the other one has to leave in the other one. So we have not a spin degeneracy, but we have a degeneracy for the two layers. And Leonid Glassmann yesterday explained already this normal situation where we have in the quantum dot system this spin degenerate ground state. We can enter with one spin direction, leave with the other spin direction. And the interaction happens at this point. And now we can transform this in such a system where we have this double layer system and this interaction between the two dots. And if an electron comes here, then another electron has to leave this. And this can be mapped directly on the Anderson impurity model. So one has a new realization without spin to do condo physics. And one of the experimental results is on this line, one can do some source drain voltage measurements and measure the zero bias maximum, which is typical for condo physics. But on the other hand, I should say, we didn't do all the measurements. We didn't measure the condo temperature for the system because there was a blackout and the sample died and the PhD student finished, and that's the normal way. Then you are not continuing this work. But we believe that this is a new realization and we will do some more work in the future. And Jürgen Weiss, who is responsible for all this, he will come to this conference here, to this workshop in November 2001, and he will speak more about quantum dots, double dots, quantum physics, and so on. So everyone want to discuss this in more detail should come again here at the end of this year. Now, I will switch to the second topic and then to the third, finally, to the most important one. We can also produce electron hole layer system. So the idea is not two electron layers, but have also excitonic effects, for example, that an electron layer and a hole layer. So this is much more difficult because you cannot dope this and then have really the bending of the energy gap within 10 nanometers or so. So you have a non-equilibrium, you have quasi-Fermi energies on one side of the barrier and quasi-Fermi energies on the other one. So one is using, or finally one will discuss some properties of these double layer system. And I will show you mainly here capacitance measurements, because we have, we will continue to do also with the dot systems and with the drag system, finally some measurements. But I will show you that already the simple capacitance between such a double layer system gives you some new interesting results. Normally, one would assume that the capacitance is mainly determined by the insulator, but also the wave function, the thickness of this two-dimensional layer enters, then the compressibility of these two systems, and then finally the interaction between the electron hole system will influence the result. And I will show you how we generate these electron hole pairs. Finally, we producing like a p-n junction with a barrier, and we put this in forward bias, and then we charge on one side holes and on the other side electrons, and then we have this electron hole layer on both sides of this barrier. And the procedure to produce the sample, the following, finally we have here the barrier, and by applying voltage across this barrier, finally we accumulate holes on one side and electrons on the other side. So the red layers a sequence of p-dop materials, and the blue one of n-dop material. You have this p-n junction, charging and forward bias. And if you design this in an optimal way, we start at the same time with starting with electrons and hole sides of both sides. But this is very complicated to optimize, as we have simultaneously the accumulation of the two different layers at the same time. But that we have really nice n-channels and p-channels shows this characteristic. If we measure the characteristic of the n-channel, we see here, starting at about 1.6 volts, it's close to the gap, we start with the n-channels, but in this case, already at 1.453 volts, we start with the p-channel, so a little bit earlier the p-channel than the n-channel, but these are nice characteristics for the two transistors on both sides of the barrier. And this was the situation in this case where we have first the p-channel. If we measure the capacitance across this, then we start first accumulating holes. Then we have a lower capacitance to this contact here. And then we have a second threshold when we start at 1.59 volts with the n-channel. So here we have the n accumulation electrons, here the accumulation of holes. In the other sample, we succeeded to have really the same, at the same threshold, the electron and the holes, and this is the result when we start this accumulation of electron holes at a certain threshold. And this is an interesting result, this peak in the capacitance, because normally in the simple theory, we expect just a reduction of the capacitance if we go to smaller carrier densities. And the reduction is mainly due to the wave function of the electron and the holes. If we reduce the number of electrons, then the center of these wave functions goes further away from the barrier, so that the effective geometry increases, so the capacitance becomes smaller. So if one calculates the capacitance, one has the geometry of the insulator, and then from the wave function here, these contributions of the electrons and holes, and there are some contribution from the compressibility of the change of the chemical potential with the carrier density. And this, in principle, can give also a negative contribution, so an increase in the capacitance at very small carrier densities, a negative compressibility. But this is always stronger than this negative. So if you have add both, normally we end up only with a decrease of the capacitance to smaller carrier density. So these are different theories. So here in the Hartree-Fock approximation, the compressibilities calculated in this way and you can do some fits, but in order to have really an increase at small carrier density, we should avoid that these two layers, the electron hole layers, becomes the center goes away from the barrier with smaller carrier density, and we believe that the excitonic effects freezes this distance at a certain distance, so that then the negative compressibility takes over, and we have this spike. So this spike disappears at certain temperatures. At 5 Kelvin is not there. The critical temperature is of about 2 Kelvin. So if we have here the temperature and look at this additional peak, which originates from this interaction between the electron and the hole system, then we have a maximum at about 2 Kelvin. At even lower temperatures, it reduces slightly. Maybe this disorder that then the electron and holes are, in simple picture, localized at different points in the XY plane, and then the capacitance becomes smaller. But there may be also other phenomena. One can think about Costa-Lizaulis transitions, all kinds of things. I will just present the experimental facts. So we found that at low temperature, if we have identical carrier densities for electron holes, this increase in the capacitance at small carrier density of about 10 to 10 per square centimeter. So these are the experimental facts. The fabrication of strongly interacting, spatially separated, electrically isolated electron hole system is possible. The capacitance measurements show an enhancement at low and match densities and low temperatures. And the enhancement is due to excitonic interaction and colorations that limit the broadening, means the change of center of the wave function for the electron hole system and the total negative compressibility. And at about 2 Kelvin, we have maximum enhancement. So these are the experimental facts. I will not discuss this in more detail because I need some time to discuss, for me, the most interesting part, the news from the frictional drag in magnetic fields. So at the beginning, I told you already that we have these double layer systems with separate contacts, current flowing in one system, measuring the voltage, and looking at the transfer resistance, the ratio of this drag voltage divided by the current. And we are doing this experiment in magnetic fields, where we have here Shumpeff-Haas oscillations in each of these two-dimensional layers. Normally, the theory defines the following values. Okay, I will give you here this equation for this transfer resistance, and the important part is the electrical susceptibility of the two layers, the imaginary part of one layer and two layers. This gives you mainly this transfer resistance, and here the coupling. These are the ingredients, but I will show you that we have in our measurements magnetic field even negative signals, and up to now we are not able with this equation to explain our experimental result. And I will summarize this experimental result, and this is the most important picture, and perhaps I should spend a few minutes to discuss this result. Let's start with these colorful curves. Here is the magnetic field, relatively small magnetic field, 1 Tesla maximum here. These are Shumpeff-Haas oscillations for the two layers, for the red layer and for the blue layer. We have slightly different carrier densities in the two layers, different carrier densities in the two layers because the period of the Shumpeff-Haas oscillation is different. And we can identify here the different filling factors. For example, at this position, the red layer has a filling factor 11 and the blue layer filling factor 12. Here we see the spin splitting of the blue layer, or here the spin splitting of the red layer. And this spin splitting disappears below 0.5 Tesla. So we have here unresolved spin splitting. These are the Landau levels. And these are the Shumpeff-Haas oscillations. So these are the characterization of each of this layer. And in the lower part is the drag, the transfer resistance here, measured in this configuration. At zero magnetic field, we have a relatively small, because it's a low temperature, 250 millikelvins. Normal drag is very small. It's very small positive value. And then in strong magnetic fields, we have a strong oscillation. Strong oscillation around the zero line with positive and negative signals. It looks like a beating effect. Now, under which condition do we see this negative drag? So negative drag is something which is counterintuitive. So moving electrons, and normally you say if you have drags, then also in the other layer, the electrons should move in the same direction. So this gives, by this definition, a positive value. So we have now a negative value in magnetic fields for this. And the negative value happens if the difference between the filling factor between the two layers is an odd number. Here's the difference about 1, 11, 12, or 10.6, 11.5 at this peak here. In this range, in the beating, we have one difference. Here is a positive signal, here is 2, here is 3, here 4, here 5. So if the difference in the filling factor between the two layers is an odd number, then we have negative drag. We can do this also just by sitting on one of the peaks and then tuning the filling factor of the other one with the gate voltage. So you see really this oscillation, negative, positive, negative, positive, always by filling factor, one difference is negative, two difference is positive, three negative, four positive, five negative, and so on. So this is the experimental fact. You see negative drag if the difference in the filling factor is 1 or 3. Now, look at this position here. Here we have filling factor 22 for the red and 24 for the blue, or here 20 for the red and 22 for the blue. This is a unresolved spin split Landau level. And in the drag, we see at this position, we're both on 0, clear, there's also 0 here, this also 0. But in between, we have some addition oscillation. So in the drag, you see here, it goes first up, and then at the maximum here, goes to 0 again, another maximum in 0. So we have a higher frequency in this drag signal. And this can be better seen if you have situation that both layers have the same carrier densities. Now I will show you experiments where in both systems we have exactly the same Schumpf-Dass oscillations, and then once more the drag. So here is a blue and the red layer. One has a higher mobility, therefore the spin splitting is better resolved in one of this system. But now we have matched carrier density. And here is a drag signal. And here is a drag signal. And you see immediately here we have spin resolved system, then the drag looks like the Schumpf-Dass oscillations. But here where we have no spin resolved, then we see that for one period in the transport, we see two periods in the drag signal. So every time at half tilt, now the transmission is interrupted, at half tilt level, so if one spin degenerate Landau level is only half filled, then we have zero drag. Even if in transport we have maxima in the resistance. So these are the experimental facts, and we can go up to filling vector here 80 or so. This is really low field region, 0.4 Tesla, high mobility samples. You see Schumpf-Dass oscillations. But it looks like that each of these peak here produces a double structure in the drag signal. There was some idea, and there was some publication, that the drag may be related to the conductivity change as a function of the carrier density. Then at the maximum, this change is zero. But if you look at this maxima here, you see that the spin split maxima doesn't produce a double peak. So it's not just the slope and the conductivity which somehow comes in into the drag experiment. And I will show you one simple equation which can explain all our results. This is an empirical equation, it has nothing to do with theory. If you assume that the transfer resistance has something to do with the density of states, the spin up levels, minus the density of state, spin down electrons for one layer, times the same for the other layer. Then we can explain all our experimental results. So one has to use such an equation. If they are matched, the two layers, then we have always a square here, we have always a positive signal, but we get zeros at half-filled Landau level, because then at half-filled we have spin up and spin down are the same, and then the drag signal should show this double peak for one sigma peak, which is not resolved for the two spins. If we have opposite spin, then we get here negative coupling in this equation and then negative signal. So somebody has to find a good theory which can map on this equation. Because up to now, we spoke to lots of theoreticians, nobody believes that direct spin coupling is important at this distance of 2040 nanometers. There's no tunneling between these layers, so something else seems to be responsible. Here, pardon? What is the definition of well resolved? Normally, in transport measurements, normally you would say, okay, this looks like well resolved spin splitting, but in principle, you have to include the localized states. All the time, if you see that this pair is closer together than this distance, for discrete levels, you should have an equidistant ladder for the Shumov-Tahars oscillation. This always indicates if you have these pairs that there's an overlap of density of states, but we have to include localized states to produce sigma curves. And it looks sometimes better resolved if you have these curves. I don't believe that you have really resolved density of states. We have the extended states do not overlap, but there is still an overlap of localized states.
So in this formula that we have shown, the density
of states include also. Okay, at low magnetic fields, we don't care about localized states. We speak always about extended states. So in this equation, I will show you the theory. We just used such type of density of states and then calculate how it looks like the Shumov-Tahars oscillation and the drag effect just using this equation which I showed you before. And here is simulation, the red curve experiment, the blue one. First the adjustment of the Shumov-Tahars oscillation, and then you see here these two drag results for mismatched carrier density, where we have this oscillation, this negative effect, and here for matched, where we have really this nice reproduction of the experimental result. So this formula explains everything very well. So one has to think about what is special with the spins or half-filled Landau level for the drag experiments.
So just understand the sign convention. If the poles are dragged parallel to the electrons, you call that positive or negative?
My definition was with a minus. So if the electrons are drifting one direction, then the sign of the voltage signal is opposite, but I call this a positive drag. So if just the friction, the simple picture, the friction gives you a positive signal, by my definition.
Negative means that the holes are going in opposite.
Okay, then you can speak about half of the Landau level, or less than half of the Landau level is an electron, or the other one is a hole system. So one can think about one Landau level as an electron hole system somehow, and then think about coupling between holes and electrons then. So, but it doesn't work for a spin split level. So if you have really nicely resolved spin split level, then this electron hole symmetry within one spin split level is not correct. So we need this mixing between the two different spins of one Landau level in each layer. And I will show you this also in one of the next pictures. What is the reason for the disappearance of the negative drag at very high magnetic fields? And this is my statement, an overlap between opposite spins within each layer seems to be necessary. And we have tested this with an in-plane magnetic field. And I will just show you one result. We change the direction of the magnetic field so we can increase the Zeeman splitting. And this is really up to nearly parallel. This is just 2 degrees off of parallel magnetic field. So we increase the magnetic field or the tilt angle in such a way that the Zeeman splitting is 43% of the Landau splitting, so that we have nearly equidistant ladder of energies. And then if we have this separation, once more here is both layers have filling factor 13, and then by gate voltage we change. Here, so the negative signal is 15, here 16, then we have this oscillation. But if we have this separate context and less overlap, then we start to get positive, positive, positive drag. So we need somehow an overlap between the two different spins to generate this negative drag. If you need this overlap, you can say, okay, just using a dirty sample, then we have broader Landau levels, then everything should be visible at higher magnetic fields. And this is also true. If you have a more dirty sample, we see the negative drag even here at 4 Tesla. All the other measurements are 1 Tesla or so, small magnetic fields. So if we go to samples with lower mobilities, then we can extend this negative drag also at high magnetic fields. But these are really details. Here at the beginning, all these features, they are for all samples there, and this is independent of the mobility. I just discuss here what happens at very high magnetic fields. If you separate the different spin levels, then we have difficulties to see the negative drag. And we try to understand what is the reason that we don't see the negative drag. If, for example, we have filling factor 1.5 in one and 2.5 in the other one, then we don't see this at very high magnetic fields. Even sometimes, if you increase the temperature, then the negative drag increases. So you can say also even the thermal excitation or this coupling between the different spin levels may enhance in the negative drag. So in this peak, for example, we measured between 0.2 Kelvin and 12 Kelvin. Up to 7 Kelvin, we increase the negative drag, and then above 7 Kelvin, it reduces. And we have done some plots just to look up to which temperature we can see still a negative drag, so some kind of phase diagram, and this is one of my last pictures here. This is for high mobility sample as function of the magnetic field, the maximum temperature where you can see a negative drag, and this is the low mobility. And at small magnetic fields where we have perhaps no localized states, then everything looks like linear. This is increased by a factor of 10. But here already, at 1 Tesla, the negative drag disappears for high mobility samples. But we can, for low mobility samples, you can see drags up to 4 Teslas. So we have some kind of oscillations also in this temperature, depending on the filling factor, on the difference of the current density magnetic field. It's very complicated. We have not analyzed this in detail up to now. So this is my summary for these experiments. The transfer resistance becomes negative when Landau levels with opposite spins are at the Fermi energy for the two different layers. Negative transfer resistance disappears when spin and cyclone gap becomes comparable in magnitude, or if they're well separated, then magnetic field and temperature range in which this negative transfer resistance is observed is larger in lower mobility samples, and the origin of this negative drag is still under debate. There are some theories, but none of the theories fit up to now these experimental data. And you saw the simple equation which we found empirically, and I encourage everyone to think about whether he has an idea to map some theory on the simple equation. Thank you for your attention.
Much.
I have some maybe comments. Several years ago, when the Gramilla did this similar experiment, probably the first paper regarding the negative, and I thought about that, and I found that it's interesting that the negative drag appears when you have the different slopes of the dependencies, right, as you see here. And in that moment, I also read a little bit about the quantum Hall effect, and I found a lot of different theories. One of them is that the quantum Hall effect is related somehow to the not superconductivity exactly, but kind of superconductivity. The excitation when you deviate from the, let's say, from the nucleus one is the vortices. Mm-hmm. So when you deviate from, let's say, to the higher filling factor, you gain clockwise vortices. You deviate to the left, right from the nucleus one, you create the counterclockwise vortices. So if you think that these vortices can interact between two layers, so mm-hmm. you can produce this negative drag, and it seems that the oscillation is quite well reproducible. I mean, the change in sign when you switch one filling factor and fix other filling factor in other way.
So you think this can be applied at filling factor 80 or so?
80, I don't know. I have no idea, but the important point that you have to be in the quantum Hall regime, so you have to be
Okay, you have a quantization, yes, of the kinetic energy, yes.
If you're far away, if you're in the pure Shubnik of the gas regime, you do not have that such effect. So I don't know how it's counter.
No, you see, it's everywhere where you have Shubnik of the gas oscillations, yes?
Okay.
Does this effect depend on the coupling between the two layers?
It's not extremely sensitive. So we change the distance, and yeah. Normally you would expect, okay, perhaps exponentially changing. We have not too many experiments, but it's not very critical, the distance. So it is the long-range interaction. Yeah.
Because the standard theory that you showed in the beginning, that's a linear response theory. So if you think of some nonlinear effects going on, some bound states forming or something between the two layers, then it's a whole new physical regime.
Yes, you can think about something like excitonic driving together or so in the system. Okay, I'm not a theoretician, so I'm here in a theoretical institute, so I hope something comes out.
Will it be possible to be dragging your electron both ways?
How fast? Therefore, we prepared this electron hole system now to do the same experiments for electron hole system. We have no results now in the high magnetic fields for Dragon with electron hole system.
About this.
Yes.
Some good explanation. So, thank you very much again.